The Changing Faith. Part 1. I have turned against my brethren and entered a fate that cannot be altered. All that I have been taught, all that I have been trained for, is now the vessel of my retribution. My existence has become a granule glowing amongst the blackness of a lost world, and the life I once knew is but a tragedy of my decomposition. In prayer, I must believe I am capable to begin the movement towards the deliverance that will set light to the throne. By the enlightenment and approval of my soul, I now speak these words into the heart of traveling winds, begging them to take this message into the ears of who would listen. The demand on my life is high, so there can be no hesitation. Even doubt shall not be spared by the vengeance of my cause. I do not regret those things I have begun to do. I do not pride myself on their brutality or art, but I am sure of their importance. Though the pain and suffering will always remain, I will carry out my task until I can no longer do so, or until it is completed. This is my burden and my burning promise. I am a faith. My name is Wayward, and my death has not come. I have revered my kind, respected them, followed them. I have performed their rituals and joined in their song. I have been loyal to them and laid down my life for them. They have made me strong and they have protected me in my weakness, but now I must diminish them. I see and understand the horrific influence they carry and the authority they frivolously surrender to the worst of evils. Undeniably, their ways were not meant for this land or any land. And it is more than simply living within their blood, from dawns to dusks, that has confronted me with difference. Faiths are the livelihood of Tomb and the kingdoms within it. If the faiths are content, then good fortune is believed to be had throughout the lands. If the faiths are feuding or dying, then the fortune of the lands is believed to be affected negatively. We are idolized and looked upon as nothing short of demigods. Our flesh is ash gray, and its texture is of leather. Our eyes are as black as coal, and our teeth are as sharp as swords. Our ears are large, and so are our noses. We grow to be as tall as giants, but our bodies always keep the same slenderness, no matter what our strength or what we consume. Our only master is the Almighty of shadows and shade, and the religion that accompanies him. It is by his will that we are feared and venerated across the kingdoms because of a set of rules named the immurements. It is these rules that control the faiths and give us our authority over the races of the world. Only the ghost of a faith has the power to kill a faith, and only with the knowledge of a faith can the ghost be controlled. These rules guard the life of the faith. The first to slit a dead faith's neck acquires its ghost. The second, who drinks of what flows, gains its knowledge, and the third, who to even glance upon it, dies. If the choice is made to take of both ghost and knowledge from the same faith, then an eternal servitude to the Almighty of shadows and shade shall be the consequence. These are the rules that govern the death of the faith. Neither man or beast is released from these laws. They bring balance and bind the world, plaguing it. The afflictions of their effect inflict the greedy with darkness, and disease the kings with a power incapable of defeat, though it is this power that gives me the opportunity I shall need to fulfill my hopes. My treason is not a simple matter, so let me tell of its birth. Not long ago, the vast kingdoms of Tomb rejoiced upon the arrival of my kindred. It was the beckoning of tides, the annual evening of return for the faiths across the lands to their origins of creation. It was a time greatly celebrated by the many races of tomb, and until this very night, this very beckoning of tides, I would have been just like any other faith, caught with impatience for the awaited honors and festivities. I, along with three others, were of the living faiths from the city of Exodus. Exodus was a vast empire of trade, housing hundreds of merchants and warehousing thousands of goods, from gold and fine jewelry to the best of metals and building materials. Its marketplace was the largest in the Harboron Kingdom and spanned the entire length of the old western shores. Its location created a center point of wealth and travel. Foreigners of all kinds made up as much of the population as the locals. Having such a crucial economic stance within the kingdoms meant that the outer walls of the city were of the strongest and tallest ever made. Sentinels lined the walls at all times, while barracks full of warriors rested at each side of the city, north, south, and east. The west harbored a fleet of several warships. Those faiths arriving at Exodus with me were Solitary, the leader of the Outer Rims, Interim, the traveling protector of merchants, and Cattle, the wild ruffian who kept to himself. Each of us had lived for no less than 300 years, but only Solitary had lived since the dawn of the kingdoms. The four of us arrived at the Temple of Betterment with a large mass of congealing followers, shouting and hollering in a cacophonous appraisal at our heels. Since the gates had been lowered and our procession began, we had been overwhelmed and followed by a sizable welcoming party, and it only grew large as we walked down Purchase Road through the busy marketplace. When we stepped through the grand doors of the temple and entered the magnificent sanctuary, the cheering of the crowds ceased. Surrounding us, huge stained-glass windows lined the walls, covered in images of sacrifice and piety. The ceiling extended high until its surfaces became like the mysteriousness of fog in night, and small, glass crevices within it allowed several beams of concentrated moonlight to penetrate the interior space, shooting down to create the symbol of the amulets with their points. Spread throughout the ground of the temple were dozens of pews adorned with exotic cushions and rugs. At the center of the temple resided the altar. The altar consisted of two black upside-down horns curved and connected in the creation of a table, which rested high atop a small mountain of stairs. Encircling the horns was a ring of large, black candles, their flames burning thin and strong. Stains of different bloods and fluids saturated the floor beneath the altar. The grating of color was vivid at the peak of the mountain and faded towards the base. It was this scene that triggered the first occurrence of dissonance within me. Like a subtle nudge, my heart slightly twisted. I had seen this temple hundreds of times, but it was only this time which transpired an awful creature of division within the gut of my being. The fetid aroma of the temple then encroached upon my senses and amplified the sensation. My brethren were not affected by any such nuances and remained within their usual calmness. The priest of the Almighty Shadows and Shade welcomed us at the base of the ascending altar. Words of approval left his lips while he conjured an ethereal spirit. The flames on the altar's candles flattened, as would heated metal under the blacksmith's hammer. Then the golden disks of flame rose from their origins and ascended upward towards the ceiling while spinning to meet the beams of moonlight. Once each of the beams held a disk of flame, the disks descended upon the line of the beam until they each rested at a point of the amulet symbol. The priest ascended the steps of the altar's mountain and was met at its peak by a hooded cleric holding a pig. With the pig transferred into the priest's hand, the priest produced a very thin knife and stuck it swiftly into the animal's neck, and just as swiftly, retrieved it. The pig squealed briefly and was then placed on the ground where it fell to its side. Blood began pooling about it from its wound and seeping down the sides of the stairs. "May the tides of the Almighty of Shadows and Shade wash upon us and cleanse us," spoke the priest. We bowed our heads and left the temple. As soon as we exited the Temple of Betterment, the crowds awaiting us outside erupted into roaring cheers. "To each of you the best of tides," said Interim, and then he vanished into the crowds, creating a wake of people that followed him to wherever his destination lay. As with you, returned Solitary, who left in a different direction. Cattle, without a word, hastily jumped into the crowd, brandishing his sickle while yelling in glee. He swung his weapon into the air and twirled it in such a way that caused a harmonic whistle to resound. Several people fell beneath his landing, and those left standing only shouted all the more loudly. I walked my own path into the celebrations. In the later hours of the next morning, after most had retreated to the sanctity of their homes, I wandered the streets of Exitus. On the sides of the roads, debris from the festivities lay about. Flags were spread in tattered disarrays, empty mugs of ale rolled around, and pieces of meat and blood splattered most surfaces. A small crowd still followed about me, celebrating continuously until they could no more, but I paid them no attention. My mind was already growing deep in its new and foreign disgust. My changing was even further underway. I had walked for close to an hour before I heard an array of cheering and screaming not far from my location. With no agenda, I made my way in the direction of the sounds. When I came upon the source of the excitement, I was horribly surprised. A small circle of people had formed in the center of the road, and cattle was in the middle. At his feet lay the remains of at least 4 children, their limbs sliced clean from their bodies. He held a girl who had already lost her arm. Blood coated her clothing and skin, and her breathing was beyond fatigued and full of terror. She tried to scream, but she could not. The crowd watching chanted at the faith in the girl, yelling prayers relentlessly. May the tides bring me safe travel. May the tides give me fortune. May the tides heal my wife. And in return, Tattle proclaimed, the Almighty of Shadows and Shade hears your plea, before slitting the girl's throat and letting her fall to the ground. The rejoicing heightened. When my eyes began to pulsate with repulsion and hate, I at once realized that I could not bear the existence of such sickening debauchery any further. Such acts were not meant to occur, and life was never meant to be degraded and mutilated in such grotesque manners, let alone any manner. I had been a part of it for too long, and my soul could not contain the evil any longer. My mind warped and fluctuated. My consciousness rippled with new awareness. The nerves beneath my flesh fired and sent uneasiness throughout me. There was no explanation of my change. There was no way to isolate or define it. All I could do was believe that the world had reached a threshold of which it could continue from no longer, and that I had been chosen to reconcile it. I could not kill cattle without the aid of a ghost, but I could definitely stop him from continuing his revolting show. The clip on my belt snapped loose as I flicked it with my finger. The coil of my whip fell to the ground, and its blade end clinked as it made contact. Just as I did so, Cattle retrieved another child that the crowd had given forth. What do you ask from the Almighty of Shadows and Shade? What gifts do you wish to receive? Cattle shouted. There will be no more sacrifices, I challenged in a voice full of rage. You oppose, Wayward? Asked Cattle. Do you wish me to deprive these people of their blessings? The crowd condemned me with expressions of disfavor. If the only way those blessings can be given is through those children's lives, then yes, I do wish to deprive them, I answered. Cattle started into a laugh of hideous degrees and raised his sickle to begin his ritualistic carnage regardless of my request. But before he could swing it, the crowd gasped at the sight of my whip's end stuck deep into his head. I yanked the whip free and lashed it out again, this time sending its end into his hand that was holding the weapon. The sickle fell to the ground. I told you there would be no more, I declared. It was not up to you to decide. I ripped the whip back to me once more. Go home, I demanded the crowd that remained gathered. Go home. At first slowly, but then rather quickly, the people left and disappeared into the dark. I was left with Cattle. It is too bad you cannot kill me, Wayward, for your petty games will not stop my ways. Cattle said, even as the pain of his wounds coursed through him and wearied him. The temple will not like to hear of what you have done. It will be a pity to see you cast from our fellowship. That will be their issue to discuss, but you will not be the one to tell them, I responded. I released my whip, sending it across and through Cattle's neck, severing flesh and bone. He fell to the ground, gripping his neck. I may not be able to take your life yet, but I will have your skull until I can. I walked to his side and pried at his head, pulling it from its connection to his body. Physical and spiritual flesh quickly bridged between his head and body in attempts to stifle my action. So, in haste, I picked up the fallen sickle and sliced at the gap, over and over, until the binding efforts of his body could overpower me no longer. Eventually, his head came free, and I gladly took it, leaving his body to spasm and wreckage in the middle of the road. Before the sun had begun its ascent, I had left the boundaries of the city, passing through the gates to the north and leaving before word of my treachery had been heard. I carried with me a thick sackcloth bag containing the head of my foe. I could hear the muffled wheezing of his breath as he suffocated, but could not die. Once I was beyond the sight of the sentinels, I pulled the bag I carried to my mouth and whispered to it, "This is only the beginning, my brother."
Part 2.
While others sleep, the faith do not. While others dream beautiful and terrifying visions, the faith always stir in the unrest of consciousness, never to experience the small pleasure of an escape or diluting respite. Memories, emotions, longings, regrets, they all linger in a swirling prison of chaos. All of them prance and prick endlessly, tirelessly. This is the mind of a faith. This is my mind. Every decision and every action remaining like bones in a grave. Satisfaction is a curious element among the faith. The significant damage of mental pain is always there. We may not scar, but we never heal. The open wounds scathing our insides. Each moment of breath is tinged with sadness or hatred or anger. This being one of the reasons why I chose to act and end the outrage of our plaguing existence. We are a disease among the living. I wish to be the cure. I must be the blind dagger and efface myself to achieve the goal. My journey, horrifyingly, lives on. Cattle died not long after I left Exodus. His body had been taken to the Temple of Betterment. There, in the idol room of the temple, the ghosts of the priest, five of which I knew he had, graciously brought him death. This was not done out of mercy for Cattle, but done in order to find my location. When a ghost entered Cattle's body to kill him, it could travel to any part of his body, no matter where it was, and seek its whereabouts. This could be done only at the time of fatality. I knew it occurred the moment Cattle's muffles ceased and the awful silence proclaimed my horrible danger. I released to the ground the sackcloth bag holding Cattle's head, took his neck, and sliced it immediately. Not a second later, a ghost from the Temple of Betterment emerged from Cattle's eyes and darted towards me. The ghosts of faiths do not resemble the physical body that once was. Instead, they are a contingency of spirit, an unapparent space of gray and white light that decays anything that comes within its touch. When they move upon the ground, the soil rots. When they move within the air, the sky burns. But once the ghost leaves, those dying things reemerge the same as they once were, a display of life, only to be dead on the inside, as if their presences were only distorted beneath the cover of strange looking glasses. With their own knowledge gone, these ghosts become the servants of whoever claims them, doing what commanded and no more. no less. The ghost that appeared would have killed me had I no protection, but I had already acquired the ghost of Cattle as my slave when I slit his throat and commanded it with my words. Using it as my shield, I held off the opposing ghost, which lashed upon my ghost with significant effort. The vision of the battle before me blurred in catastrophic distortion. The ground beneath the ghosts turned into a blackened pit of ash, while the air within them singed in flames. Finally, the ghost of my enemy was forced to return to its own master, of whom it could not be apart from long. I was one of the few faith to ever control a ghost. It had been an unwritten law that the priests of the kingdoms of Tomb sliced the throats of any faiths that perished. This was how they enforced their power and religion, through the authority they bore with the possession of ghosts. It would not be long until an army would converge upon me, along with such ghosts, but I rather liked the idea of them coming to me. When the ghost from Exodus left, I took Cattle's head with its dripping neck and put it back into the sackcloth bag. I dug up the soil containing the fluids that had run freely from the head's neck moments before and put that also into the bag. Only on my watch would someone gain the knowledge of Cattle. With but a day's head start against my foes, I decided to find the grounds that would be to my advantage. I searched amongst the immediate terrain and came to settle upon a steeply sloped hillside. From the trees around me, I could tell I was still in the middle of Alterous Forest, the thick haven of pine trees and trepid fairies. The hillside was jagged with large amounts of abstract rocks, creating only a few narrow passages which would slow the army's march upon me. Using my whip, I wrenched large branches from the trees above and placed them as impediments among those trails. If I was to survive, I had to gain much more power, and to begin that process, I needed another ally besides a ghost. The fairies of Alterous Forest had been known to be stealthy beyond the means of any other creature. Their speed and smallness of size made the perfect spies. Rarely did they ever show themselves, save for those times when they were meant no harm. With my ghost, I could easily find them, and I did. I ordered my ghost to seek one out and bring it back to me. It came not a few minutes later, swirling through the woods with a fairy within its grasp. The fairy squirmed in distress, its flesh gone beneath the hold of the ghost, and its bones flaking like dust in all directions. The ghost released it before me, and I quickly grabbed it. When it left the presence of the ghost, its flesh and features returned as if they had never been marred. Holding the fairy in my hand, I thrust it into the remains of Cattle's head, forcing it to swallow some of the fluid that collected there. In time, the fairy was speaking to me. "Poisons be your drink. Such things are not meant to be known by the folk of our kind." "I demand your allegiance, small fairy," I replied. "The time has come to end the regime of our sacred faiths. Perhaps, when all is done, my death will be your reward. Hate me, but hate me no less than those other faiths that run amok upon our world, terrorizing the ignorant and enslaving them to their ways." With the knowledge of Cattle bestowed upon the fairy, I knew it would understand the evil that had grown so prevalent. With its new memories, it would desire nothing less than to join me in my quest for vengeance. "You speak harsh words, but my mind is haunted by worse. Your desires are sincere enough for me. Let me out of this horrid sack, and I will speak openly to you." I did as it requested. Swiftly, the fairy exited the sackcloth bag, fluttering before me with shockingly intrepid wings. "My name is Wayward. What is yours?" I asked the little creature. "Sturmistassin Clover," it said. "I will call you Clover," I returned, not asking for the fairy's approval. "Fend by me, but don't ever have that ghost handle me again." Little did it know that its physical body had already been stained. The army from Exodus arrived sooner than I had expected. Clover's retrieval of this sighting was invaluable. Men, armed with shields and spears, marched with unruly speed towards my location. Leading them were Solitary and Interim, raging with pride for their brethren and wanting nothing less than the victory of my defeat for themselves. It was this recklessness that would win me the battle and position me for the future slaughter of my kind. Along with the two faiths leading the army were the five ghosts of the priest, which meant he followed not far behind. The priest and his ghosts were the greatest threat to my success. I positioned myself in the middle of the hillside, not at the top where they would expect me. My first move would be one of surprise and utmost importance. Solitary was the first to come within my proximity. He was the oldest of the faiths from Exodus, but his quick death would be no homage to those years. When he ran to me, I leapt from my hiding, holding Cattle's lifeless head to his turning gaze. As according to the rules of the Almighty of Shadows and Shade, Solitary died, and as he fell, I slit his throat with my whip, conjuring his ghost to my aid. Panic then shone on Interim's face, who was only steps behind his humiliated comrade. He too was made of sudden demise, for he had no time to react to the new ghost under my command. The ghost burrowed deep within Interim's flesh, burning him inside and out. He screamed a sound that I had never heard leave the lips of a faith. It should have greatly disturbed me, but to the contrary, I felt enormous pleasure hearing it. When his scream was through, my whip was there to greet his neck, bringing to me yet another ghost of the faiths. In but a moment's time, I had depleted the grand city of Exodus's faiths to nothing but ground meat, meat which Clover quickly nibbled upon as I had commanded it, gathering the knowledge of ages past. With the service of two new ghosts, I deplored them to meet the priest's ghosts and hold them from me while I made my way to the priest. Killing him was the last opposition to my victory. I ran wildly through the ranks of the army, their weapons causing mere flesh wounds upon me. With my whip and a short dagger, I trudged through them easily, mercilessly chopping them down before me. The priest of Exodus's Temple of Betterment awaited me at the heel of the army. He stood with his own long dagger. Spirits of all kinds enveloped his surrounding space, protecting him and empowering him. They twisted in glee and gluttony, cackling like fire around freshly placed fuel. Without as much as a word, the spirits converged upon me, tackling me to the ground, pummeling me with invisible fists and evil necromancies. I felt the blood within my veins boil and thin, bringing my limbs to nothing more than lifeless fluid. I looked upon the priest's gaze, the priest I had known for so many years, and the priest that had taught me the ways of the Almighty of Shadows and Shade. His face was menacing. His chest heaved in mighty breaths while hatred scoured through him. In the midst of my pain, I saw the priest's demeanor change suddenly, and his eyes bulge. I saw him fall to his knees with a gaping horror written on his lips. I saw him fall completely to the ground, with the blade extending from the back of his head. And there, hovering where the priest had just been, was the small fairy I had only just met, stirring with a new frenzy behind its eyes. The knowledge within it bulged, and I knew it wanted to kill the faith more than myself. No later had the priest died than his ghosts and spirits vanished forever from the material world, leaving my own ghost the enjoyment of destroying the multitudes of warriors left. They erupted into gas and unrelenting pleas as the ghosts passed through them, gracefully and easily. I was ready to be an executioner.
Part 3.
My greatest ally and infernal enemy is time. It can change history and efface memories.
It can create life, and it can take it away. And to the immortal, time is the ultimate instrument of both plague, the uncanny curse of centuries of wisdom and knowledge and experience and pain, and revision, the gift of the possibility of perfection, relative, of course, to the individual who controls its direction. There are many rewards and follies of time, but it is these two that, existing as nemeses to each other, destroy any hope of blamelessness. Though I may strive for redemption, my guilt of acts past will always rest beside my heart. Each and every decision, whether selfless or selfish, shall hang above my head in a halo of eternal flames. If I had lungs to scream beyond limitation, I would beg for the forgiveness of ages past. If I had hands to number the devils of my years, I would sacrifice them to the lives I took and fiendishly displaced. My suffering can only end in death, but I cannot allow it to comfort me. I am undeserving, and if it came now, it would only be failure. I can only find redemption at the end of one path, and that is with the extinction of my race. I will be victorious. I will finish what I have set out to accomplish, and though the odds of success have been unforgiving, I have marched forward effortlessly. There is something with me, something that has always been with me, and it is fighting for me, making my triumphs as easy as cleaning the blade end of my whip. Perhaps this companion was that which changed me, or perhaps it has seen my mission and longed for nothing less than the very same outcome. And perhaps I am its catalyst. If I am, I will be loyal unto the very end. For many years, I waited in hiding, letting my disappearance wash and fade with abysmal time, time that had nowhere or effect on my will or ravenous, vengeful desires. The pertinence of my capture throughout the kingdom of Tomb steadily lessened and spread thin. And as a new century grew near, and my face only remained in the minds of those who I would destroy, my calling eagerly pulled me from concealment and returned me to action. Even Sturmistas and Clover had long withered amongst the world, taking his knowledge to the grave, his homage living forever in my memories. Patience was necessary, years and years and years of patience. I had slain the faiths of Saturn Valley, the faiths of Morpit Hollows, the faiths of the three great cities, Falaron, Het, and Grol, and even the wandering faiths of the wilderness beyond Aiken's Terror. Blood had been spilled deep into the soil of Tomb. But if I were to ever end the nightmare once and for all, I needed to strike at the very epicenter of the Emirments and the religion they were bound to. I needed to strike the Tower of Entrance. There was no timeline for the events that occurred there, only the innumerable cadence of a mysteriously sized hourglass, and when that time expired, it reverberated through the air, and it trembled beneath the ground. I could feel it inside me, and I could hear its call. When that time expired, it was the beginning all over again. It was the birth of a faith. There were beginnings, even for faiths, though it was not often that they came to be. When the moon was right and the skies were clear, the priests of the Almighty of Shadows and Shade forged the accumulations of rampant soul, soul that journeyed the heavens of the stars, and soul that made it black. From the living came the dead, and from the dead came the shadows, and the shadows became lost in the spaces of the furthest regions, and from these shadows came the faith. only when the universe deems such a date could decades of this artifact mass be summoned into the seed of a faith's heart and conjured into life through the emirements, bound into flesh by the very hands of the Almighty of Shadows and Shade. This ceremony seemed to be the only time that the great master of the emirements ever shown himself, and it was this moment that I had waited for restlessly. When I set foot into the Tower of Entrance, feelings reminiscent of other unknown lives split between my mind and took me to incorporeal realms in flashes of whispering gloom. My essence waned beneath the animosity of undead catastrophe hovering all around. In lucid transparency, things were waiting to feast on my consciousness. They lurked behind thoughts and the visions of my sight, manifesting subtle inconsistencies to thwart the weak and unprepared. I resisted their haunting with a gracious smile. This place, this temple, was the birthing house of my kind, and so it would be here that I would forever end the future of my brethren, the filth and spawn of evil. In all of my 474 years, I had not returned once since the day of my own creation. I looked around the main hall of the tower, confident in my entrance, as dozens of ghosts followed behind and beside me, their power contorting the world within them. I walked through the doors of the Apothicon and began making my way up the bountiful ascension, 3,771 steps that swung wide around a thick, cylindrical expansion. I was eager to greet whom and what awaited me at the top. The Tower of Entrance stood tall on a precipice of rock deep within the Starsight mountain range. Within its highest rooms, only the depths of the mountain's ravines could be seen. But the tower was not meant for sights of landscapes. Greeting heights with supernatural build, the Tower of Entrance spoke into the skies of all things through the means of its wicked priests. Its smooth, curved stones formed a hub for the necromancies of the kingdom and beyond. I had not encountered any opposition by the time I reached the halfway mark of the bountiful ascension, but I began to hear the sweet, terrible noises of ceremony above me, the horrible diapason of murmurings and humming scribbled uneasiness upon my flesh, and with the sounds those unseen inhabitants of the tower writhed impatiently with glee. I continued upward. As I grew near the zenith of my climb, even my ghosts began to tremble. They spun about me, anxious and unsettled. At the top of the bountiful ascension rested the sister doors of the Apothicon, a much grander display of architecture and might. These doors stood ornately, with the most detailed carvings of the histories of my brethren. They had no enchantments or traps within them. Their pure, thick existence was daunting enough to behold. The sounds behind the Apothicon reeled exasperatingly. I pushed through the towering doors. Within the expanse of a huge dome room, a figure holding his hands and head to the heavens set his gaze upon my own. His eyes bulged and fury boiled beneath. Like the winds of passing and the corridors in between, this moment has come with expectant force, spoke the figure. You have arrived not a moment too soon. On either side of this figure, six priests of the Almighty of Shadows and Shade stood at the points of the emirements within the circular space. While the lone figure before me had altered his gaze, the other 12 priests had not. Their arms remained outstretched, and their heads remained bent back, faces to the ceiling. incantations and mumblings ululated from their tongues. The room in itself was plain. There were no decorations or luxuries as within the temples of the kingdom. There was not even an altar. The only aspect of the room that held any unfamiliar purpose was an exposing circle cut into the peak of the dome, allowing cold, bitter air to nestle all around. The stars and moon in the night sky shone through the opening and appeared larger than I had ever seen them, their light engrossing the dome room's interior. "I've come for you," I said. The figure's eyes still bulged, and his expression did not change. "And I have waited for you," the figure returned, "although I do not think you know who I am." His hair was brown and haggard. His robe was gray and worn. His features were youthful and knowledge-stricken, and his eyes radiated ancientness. "It does not matter who you are. You must die." I shot forth perfectly, as if rehearsed. It had been much too long since I had last struck down my enemies. The figure began to laugh, eyes still bulging. His chuckles apathetically resounded against the backdrop of priest-incanted harmony. "Much too late for that. It is irrelevant now. What does matter is that you are here. Welcome to the Appraisaline, the ceremony of the Dark One. Once began, it cannot be stopped, not by you, not by me, not by death, not by any means. So, as you were, kill m—" Before he could even finish his last words, my ghost had stolen his every orifice of life. Only the bones of his frame were left, and even those fell to the ground and shattered into dust. Each of the other priests met the same demise, not moments later. They never faltered from their pious stances. They never stopped with their endless sounds. When they were all laid to rest, there was nothing left in the room but the light from above. And there, standing in the stillness and silence, with vendetta written across my soul, I waited for what was to come. A body fell from the opening above me. It fell so fast there was no way to tell if it was living or dead. It crashed upon the stone floor, bones cracking and flesh splitting. And then another fell, and another, and another, and another, until 13 bodies had splattered across the floor in front of me. Children, women, and men. The carcasses then slid together, connecting at their heads, a sick star of mutilation. It rose. The bodies dangled like raggedy ornaments, every limb swaying without provocation, as if some invisible thing were playing with it. Then the limbs all at once began to swing, lashing upon each other in an unsynchronized display. One by one, the limbs stuck together. They melded and warped with their neighbors, clothing, flesh, bone, and all, creating a thick tarp of malformed carnage. Once this floating blanket was completed, it started to spin. As it spun, it stretched its hanging mass until all sagging elements elevated and flattened. Blood danced from the strained, splintering wounds. The unnerving conglomeration of flesh became a disc and rotated perpendicular to the floor. It spiraled its contents, sending them back and forth, instantaneously between this place and another, exchanging elements, bridging worlds. Blackness opened, Color digressed, then color reemerged, more vivid, more plaguing, reaching out with stories of untold damnation and unconquerable agony. Sinister visions flashed before me, and explosions, filled with screaming, resounded behind the portal of spinning bodies. The appraisaling had begun. My ghosts balked in their movements. They froze to forgotten terrors seeping into their essences. The matter within them decayed and then sprouted mindful, verdurous creatures that curled, looped, and twisted in labyrinthine growths. I still remained at the entry of the domed chamber, atop the tower of entrance, pinned against the enormity of the epithecon behind me. I watched as the master of the faith's existence, the almighty of shadows and shade, created his dominating entrance. The spinning disc faded backwards into the space between the fabrics of substantiality. As it did so, the vision of the realm beyond focused, revealing a land churning in twisted mires of unsavory animation. Everything moved, everything lived, everything was aware, fighting, eating, plaguing, surviving. It was unending unrest. Within this vehement orgy of joined abominations, a form leaned forward, bulging the realm out of the portal and into the chamber beside me, like a hand beneath dough. The ongoing, sadistic festivities of its surfaces, its flesh. A myriad of orifices and openings upon it spoke its will in a variety of tones and pitches. Its sound was beyond infernal.
Lesser, I pity thee. I have seen the unraveling universes. I have witnessed the births of stars. I have condemned voids. I have seduced wise. My being is everlasting, ever flowing. My being drenches with grandeur unknown to minds. Take back your pittances, reclaim your insolvent soul.
I fell to my knees out of sheer, dominating horror. Tears and fluid fell from my eyes, nose, and mouth, oozing like thick blood as every nerve in my body convulsed, squeezing its juices from my openings. A decision rested before me. I had the choice to either die vainly, swallowed without effort, or defiantly engaged in pathetic combat with timeless evil. There would be no running. There would be no survival. The genocide of my kind had been a feasible outcome. Not moments before I came to know the very intimate fear of my maker. But there was one more variable to my impending decision. A portal of my own opened inside my mind. There was yet another world, another path.
I shall sacrifice myself,
I whispered unwaveringly to the unholiest of unholy, before thought was allowed to make my decision for me. He heard me clearly, the words a resolution to his distaste. Let me throw myself to your domain. Let it devour and disgorge me. Only then will you be truly content with the outcome of my demise. In response, the Almighty of Shadows and Shade released an army of tongues from its mass that pierced my motionless ghosts with uncanny traction. My ghosts stuck to the oscillating tongues and were pulled through the portal of the spinning flesh disc, Inside the room, the ghosts howled as even their remains of remains embraced something far worse than death. Their power and might vanished like breath upon a small flame. The loss of the spirit stabbed invisible wounds throughout my insides. I was utterly defenseless.
Now,
the King of Filth spoke. His enormous form sank back into the ocean of its writhing relatives. This was the zenith of my rebellion. It was time for the revolutionists' move. The last strand of will flicked against the scars of my brethren and its indulgent god. The faiths were to be no more. I stood upon one knee and angled my face towards the thwarting portal. I bore my teeth together and held my breath. Then I lunged for the ethereal nightmares behind the gateway. The place beckoned me forth as I ran. It called to me with rapturous thoughts and delirious wills. Each silent voice was like a hand, grabbing my body and pulling it more fiercely towards the bowels of the Dark One's home. As I neared the spinning disk, I leapt. My body pressed into the bruised and battered flesh of the portal, its fibers momentarily cradling me before allowing me to slide through its flawed presence. Every follicle of my body was molested as I passed to the other side. I left all I had ever known, the rituals, the priests, the sacrifices, and the kingdom of Tomb. I entered despair. My quest for vengeance and my quest for salvation ended there. Everything that occurred at the ladder of that end is incapable of words. Only its brief lesson can live on, just as I live now. Evil succumbs.